You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. This week it is Fanboy Versus Totally Awesome, as this episode is going to be totally awesome because...
It is?
We have the two Chris's. Yes.
Two Chris's.
Oh, yay.
We have a Chris over here and a Chris over here. You just can't see one of them.
I thought you were going to say something like Jeff Johns was like on this episode or something.
No.
Well, that would be better, but this is good nonetheless.
That would be a little bit better.
This is like our first live show as well. So we're
second, I think, live show.
Well, officially,
we're gonna say this is the official first live.
And given that we're still in beta, because I'm still trying to work the kinks out of this stuff.
Fair enough.
That works.
Okay, so we'll call it beta. Still beta, but hey, and we've got McFeely like on camera. Like,
yeah, I'm back. Hi everybody. Hi listeners. I've been away. I'm back now.
Yeah, you did. So you went to, where did you get you? Portugal? Is that where you'd gone on vacation?
I was in Portugal 2 weeks ago. Then I was just exhausted the week after that. But you didn't record a show anyway, so that's okay.
Yeah, we suck.
Well, and then I was at Auto Assembly last weekend.
Nice. And all the reports have been that that was completely awesome. No. So.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
I've been lyrical for a while about how awesome that was. I'm only just now really come down from... the depression.
You mean come back up from the depression?
But back up, come down. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Come down off the high, come risen. It was like a U shape. I went. I slingshotted back up. I indulged in a little art therapy over the last day or two and drew some pictures.
I saw on Twitter. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Good stuff. Nice.
Yeah, check out my Facebook or my Twitter if you want to see Jim.
That was awesome.
I also drew some super deformed cosplayers just an hour ago.
I saw the link, but I didn't actually click on it. I was a little bit afraid, to be honest.
There's nothing. It's perfectly harmless.
They were harmless, yeah, but they were pretty funny. Awesome. Do we have any news? Is anything exciting? I don't know if you're up on anything that's happened. Well, like three weeks ago, there was the whole Todd McFarlane thing, and I didn't know if you knew what had happened.
What was
that,
the Todd McFarlane thing?
Pay a heck of a lot of. I mean, I missed a lot of news because I was away, and then nothing really seemed to happen the week I was back, and nothing much seems to. What you tell me what happened with Todd McFarlane? There was it was ruled that the medieval versions of the Spawn characters were derivative works, and he would have to pay somebody money for them.
Yeah, what is that guy's name?
Neil Gaiman?
Yes.
This is Neil Gaiman, that was it.
Yeah, so...
Like, Neil Gaiman needs more money.
Yeah. Yeah,
really. But yeah, I mean, that was the termination. And I think even Cagliostro was a part of that, so...
Yeah. To be honest, they totally are. So, you know, others told.
So, yeah. Yeah, but I don't know much more than that about it, and I don't know much of the backstory, so we'll just... say that that's interesting.
So when is he going to pay Marvel and DC?
Yeah, right. Good luck with that.
Just casting my eye over the news here, and nothing much leaping out, huh?
Well, I did see something like Marvel's doing a Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, God.
Comic?
Not really news. Are they doing comics like that?
Any sea monsters involved?
It doesn't look like it.
You know, if they made a version of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, that would be phenomenal. But it would be even better if they used the Dawn of the Dreadfuls prequel, which was amazing and actually.
Well, somebody's done a graphic novel of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Did they?
Yeah, I don't know who it was offhand. Hang on, you know.
I mean, the book only came out like last year. I'm amazed that that someone's already jumped on and did a.
I had it in my hand not so very long ago. Hang on.
Wow. The prequel is better, though. I enjoyed the prequel a lot more.
It's by, I don't know who it's by. It doesn't seem to be by any comic book publisher of note that I can that I can see. Published by Del Rey, so far as I can see.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they did that. There you go.
Is there, just, I mean, because we've kind of been sparse, and is there anything, McFeely, that you want to touch on maybe from the last few weeks before we get into this week's? That's of note?
It's all kind of blurred together, to be honest. The stuff from last week, I only read, like, 2 days before. The stuff from the week before last, I only read 2 days before I read last week's stuff. Let's see, what springs to mind? Amazing Spider-Man is morbid.
Yeah.
Morbid.
It's wrong.
Stay away for about another month.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like I'm not horrified by it or anything. It's just an exercise in crossing the T's and dotting the I's. And it's so, I'm not married, but I feel vaguely insulted on behalf of everybody who is married by the allegation that the only reason you get married is to have children.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's basically, I don't know.
The newest issue is kind of interesting.
I try to find why it happened and then it'll be over.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that Peter and Mary Jane were aware that there was a mind wipe. I just figured that it just retroactively did it all.
It's from that Fantastic Four crossover story is that they did at least know that the knowledge had been wiped from everybody's minds. So that whole story about how nobody could recognize his face on the statue and all that stuff.
Yeah. They had always kind of hinted that they knew about the deal, and everybody else just didn't know, but just Mary Jane and Peter kind of knew about it.
I mean, that to me always sort of smacked of something that the new writers came up with.
Yeah.
The same way that they actually went to the lengths to explain how Harry came back and to explain all, instead of Quesada's approach originally, which was, it's magic, everything's different, that's it. The new writers, the writers who came on A Brand New Day, actually wanted to craft explanations to show how we got from A to B. And the mind wipe seemed like one of those. And I was always a little, I kept thinking I'd missed something somewhere and that they'd actually explained how it happened. But no, they haven't, and they're finally getting to it now. And, yeah.
I'm kind of surprised we haven't got a mind wipe for the mind wipe yet. So we forget that there was a mind wipe, and we just assume this is how it was for, like, the last 20 years.
I thought Siege was over, and we were done with all this century-style nonsense. But
yeah.
Well, the end is nigh.
Because Slot's taking back over, and then we can pretend that all this.
I feel it might be time for me to jump on Spidey fully and properly now after Slot takes over.
Yes,
I could see myself doing that.
What do you mean really fully and properly? You have your own pull box. I'm certain you put whatever in it you want to.
Oh yes, I do. Spidey is just not one of those titles. I found I was incapable of justifying giving Marvel money for that comic after one more day. And I'm not usually that guy. As I think you guys probably know at this stage, I'm not usually that guy about this sort of thing. But one more day was such a even the lure of Dan Slott couldn't convince me to pay money for that comic. I've just examined it as this has come under my nose every Wednesday as a retailer.
Brand New Day is like the entire reason I picked up Spider-Man. I wasn't buying it from about, oh goodness. I was reading it after the JMS run ended, but I don't remember where I stopped. Do you remember where I stopped, Triplett?
I have no idea.
It was around the time when he got that Iron Spider costume thing.
Well, that was still JMS.
I stopped probably in the middle of the JMS run because I just didn't care.
Yeah. But since like the very end of the JMS run, you stepped up. It was Iron Spider stuff.
But the lore of Brand New Day is like, this sounds awesome. I've got to get it. And it's actually one of the only two Marvel books I actually literally subscribe to. I get it in the mail every week.
It's the only reason I buy anything for Marvel now.
Yeah.
I mean, Avengers have kind of got me back in.
Yeah, I really liked Avengers Prime number one. Number two, I missed this week, so I got to catch up with that.
I'm a little puzzled by Prime number two.
I do have one thing I want to mention. Something that I haven't been getting that I need to start. I read the entirety. Well, let me start. I was about a year and a half back on Fantastic Four. I started, I was in the second or third issue of the Mark Miller run. I read the last two parts of Doom's mentor story, and I just sort of suffered all the way through that. I'm like, well, McFeely really loves this Hickman guy. I'll read it. I want to marry the Hickman run. I'm proposing right now to the Jonathan Hickman run of Fantastic Four. Will you marry me?
It's begging me. I've already we've been cohabiting for some time, and we've set a date.
I absolutely love this comic.
Are you caught up on all of it?
Yeah,
now?
I'm caught up
so
on all of it.
So you've read the newest issue?
Yeah.
Wasn't that awesome?
Yeah. So, you know, while I think in concept, I love the Mark Waid run a little more, in execution, this is way better. It's.
I mean, he's had a couple of duff issues here and there, yeah. Like that one where Johnny and Ben go to Counter Earth.
I didn't mind that issue. It wasn't as.
I mean, it just seemed to me to be a big. Mark Miller's one was like, yeah, remember that?
I love that. The cover of that issue. I wish that the cover would have been what we would have got.
Story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I what I loved about the Mark Waid run is it started with these lofty aspirations about changing the way that people would look at the Fantastic Four. Never really achieved all of that. But in the issue that you actually quoted a couple of issues back, when Reed is at that conference that he started, and he's berating all the other scientists for being doom mongers and naysayers. And he's talking about how bright our future is. I'm like, this stuff is brilliant. This is like one of those things where Reed is the mouthpiece for Hickman. I mean, he must be a science geek because that's the way I feel as a science geek reading the news, reading articles. I'm like, wow, it's all doom and gloom and it's all crap. This is all, I don't see why people want to strive to be in science. But I mean, Reed perfectly crystallized how I feel, and I love that. It's brilliant. It's fantastic.
It's all good.
Yes.
Yuck.
That's true. I mean, it really is. I started reading Fantastic Four in the 90s with the who was it? It was Chris Claremont run, and I was like, it's okay. I really haven't had a run that I absolutely loved, other than the Mark Waid run. But this is the best Fantastic Four I've read ever.
It's the best Fantastic Four, I think, that, you know, I only started a little bit earlier than you. I started with the Heroes Reborn Fantastic Four, and I know in retrospect, a lot of the Heroes Reborn stuff is pure garbage, but I have a lot of nostalgia for that particular period. Like, I'm enjoying Young Allies with Nomad and everything. And I think Fantastic Four is probably the most successful of the Heroes Reborn books, but I followed it through the Heroes Return books, through that really good three-issue run that Scott Lobdell and Alan Davis had, and then through the drudgery seems like a slightly harsh word, but the meh of Chris Claremont's. How long did he spend on it? 30 issues?
He's there for a while.
And multiply that by like 19 pages of nothing but text, and you pretty much have his run on Fantastic Four. But I think, if I remember correctly, he used Diablo pretty well.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
I think that was Jeff Loeb.
Was it?
I don't remember Diablo appearing in a Claremont issue.
When did Loeb write it? When did he
wrote it for a while, actually. After Claremont ended, he wrote a story where Diablo came along and destroyed Pier 4, and then they went into the negative zone.
That was the issue.
Like when Silver Surfer died, like off page or something?
That was the one. Yep. That was Loeb.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then Loeb's run wrapped up with that Abraxas storyline and Galactus being reborn. Because that was when Galactus was dead and a star at the time. They brought Galactus back and Valeria got turned back into a fetus. And then Carl Kessel did a fill-in where Valeria got born again. And Carl Kessel always writes really, really solid Fantastic Four stuff. And I've always wondered why he hasn't had a bigger, longer crack at the book. I'm always happy to see Carl Kessel's name attached to something Fantastic Four-ish. And then Waid came on, and then I remember, did Kessel do another fill-in between Waid and... after Waid?
I do remember seeing a few Kessel issues, so I... it might have even had Mike Waringo art as well.
Possibly.
So, yeah, I think so. I remember a few issues, like two or three.
What the heck happened between Castle and, I mean, between Wade and Miller?
A lot of stuff. I can't remember.
Yeah, but
was it JMS? That was the JMS run, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Did JMS write it? I don't even remember JMS writing.
Yeah, he wrote Fantastic Four.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it wasn't
was
memorable.
Was it that bad?
It wasn't memorable. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't memorable.
It wasn't bad. No, it was.
I was buying the book. Why can't I remember it?
Yeah.
There
was nothing.
He's not my favorite writer. I mean, I'll put it that way.
The thing I loved about that was when he left the book by coincidence, design enforced, I don't know, 2 issues before the Civil War crossover was over. And then Dwayne McDuffie came in and wrote the last two and just came in and threw out everything JMS had been doing about, yes, well, I support the Superhuman Registration Act because my crazy uncle wouldn't testify for McCarthy in the 50s, and so we must follow the law. And then Dwayne McDuffie came in and it was like, actually, I loved something Isaac Asimov invented so much that I made it real and used it to predict the future. And I was like, one of these things is a lot more like Reed Richards than the other.
So, I guess we'll get to it then. All right, Triplet, what did you read this week? I have no idea what anybody's read. We didn't talk about
it. I don't think I read anything but Fantastic Four myself.
Oh, fly blind. All right, well then you're covered, Kilby.
Awesome.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, I didn't read that.
New Avengers and Secret Avengers. Mm-hmm. And Superman
72,
I think.
I wanted to read that.
I've read some other stuff, but I can't. I don't know. Nothing really jumped out at me.
Amazing Spider-Man 640 jumped out at me and it kicked me in the balls.
Yeah, basically. I think the only book that kicked out that kind of, you know, stood out for me was New Avengers. I guess.
Was it good?
I liked it.
Yeah.
That's one of Bendis's 2 Avengers books at the moment.
Yeah.
It's our Luke Cage.
He only has
Avengers.
2.
Well, 3 if you count Prime.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We'll see. There you go.
I'm finding it amazing that I don't hate Bendis's stuff right now. Actually, and here's a real testament of how much I'm really caring. I'm actually going to go back and read all of Ed Brubaker's run on Daredevil.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to do that because I want to get current with Daredevil. So I have to start around issue 83 all the way through 119, then 500 through 509.
Do you want to be current because you want to start getting it again?
I want to be current on Daredevil.
I mean, is it supposed to be good right now or something?
No. I just Daredevil, he's been a core character for me since the 90s.
Yeah, but he's leaving. He's dying, isn't he?
Something's happening.
They're replacing
him. All tied up in this Shadowland thing.
Yeah,
they kill them all.
End of it, yeah, that's what this whole Shadowland thing is.
I don't even know.
He's gone bad, is the current plot.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so they're, the whole end of the thing is, the whole question is, you know, who's going to be the man without fear? And they've been.
They haven't hit,
you know,
print yet, but.
I'll be the man without fear.
I was raising my hand for the people watching the video.
There's a couple of names they keep, like, throwing out there. Like, what was the one?
Darkhawk? I hope Darkhawk's
the name. They threw out Gambit out there. They threw out
Nova and Kraven, I believe, or two.
Yeah,
others.
Yeah. Kraven was the one I thought was the most. Reasonable considering that they
haven't
just
hit print yet, though, have they? They've just shown them at conventions and things. They haven't actually made it into comics yet. But we'll be seeing them very soon, I imagine.
How about Kazar? Kazar's got to be the man without fear. Lives in the
Where is he these days?
I don't know. He needs to be the man without fear. He can be in the urban jungle.
It would be cool if they used the Gladiator as the man without fear.
But he's busy over in Secret. Wait, hang on. Which Gladiator?
The Daredevil villain. The Daredevil villain, yeah.
That became
a tailor. Is he dead?
I think he's dead.
Really?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
So do you want to give us a full review on anything, Triplet, or basically just read stuff?
Amazing Spider-Man still sucks.
Don't read
about
it.
Next month
don't read
so.
It.
Okay.
Secret Avengers was okay. Nothing jumped out on it.
I'd like to know how this classifies as part 4 of 4 and we still don't know what the happened.
Yeah, because like next week the secret life of Nick Fury.
I think Jonathan Hickman's doing all right with that over in Secret Warriors. If this could be an LMD, that'd be just fine, thanks. Also, what the hell was up with the Cowboys?
With the Cowboys?
In the last issue?
I don't remember. What happened in the last issue?
It was like a first couple of pages was these cowboys across a prairie, and it seems like one of them is the guy who's in charge of this secret. I genuinely thought when I started reading the last issue of this that I had got the wrong comic bound inside the cover for a couple of pages. I did not know, and I still don't know what the hell was going on, but Captain America putting Nova's helmet on was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and him and Nova having the big fight, yeah, that was good. But New Avengers was, like, so much better. New Avengers was pretty awesome, I thought. We got our big, you know, cliffhanger. We got our big surprise as to who's the bad guy. Yeah. And I don't really want to spoil it.
Spoil it.
Oh, come on.
No, spoil it.
Okay. He spoiled me on Fantastic Four already there.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
Off.
I thought you said that you'd already read it.
No, I said, like, four issues into it. Like, what do you think about his dad coming back? I didn't read it. I haven't gotten that far.
Well, that would have been ruined. I know if I'd been here to tell you.
Yeah.
Rosebud is a sled. Awesome. Okay. Well then, McFeely.
Okay. What have I got this week? Well, I got Brightest Day. So I suppose that's a good chance to talk about the other stuff that's happened in Brightest Day while I wasn't here.
Oh, I read that too.
Interesting.
I didn't read it.
Yeah,
go ahead
about that. Go ahead.
I haven't read
something. I'm interested in all of this, the idea that they all, we know not, well, basically based on, I was listening to last week's show just the other day, and we seem to know even a little more now than we did then, is that all of the different tasks that the resurrected heroes and villains have to carry out seem to be they will lead the way to the individual who will wield the white light for reals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of them sound more interesting than others. This issue in particular is mostly a Martian Manhunter and Hawkman thing. So it has the Martian Manhunter finally figuring out about the existence of this other creature that we've been tracking and watching eviscerate people for the first couple of issues. While I just don't care about the Hawkman plot at all. So,
yeah,
I imagine that this double page spread about the history of Hawkworld would probably interest might be going too far, but it would probably make some kind of sense to me. I would probably recognize it as a more open retcon if I had any concept of the real history of Hawkman, because I know
nobody knows Hawkman's real history.
Yeah,
I mean Hawkman literally needs a crisis of his own.
Had a few.
Yeah,
and basically the planet that they're on seems to be some kind of bridge world between Earth and Thanagar, and I don't know really what that's supposed to mean.
Well,
supposed to be telling me that humans had, that humans boned giant hawk people, and that's where Thanagarians come from, or what? I don't really get it. Also, seems like Hawk Girl's mum is boss here.
Oh and no. Kind of ugly.
What else happened?
So hey, real quick question. I just want to make sure that I'm right here. Basically, post Blackest Night, Kendra Saunders has been completely wiped away.
Apparently, yes.
That sucks.
But she's probably in there somewhere, you know. She's just Shayera now with red hair, because that's what we like, Justice League Unlimited people, Brian.
Yeah.
Shut up.
There's an air of that. It's like I was always kind of surprised Dwayne McDuffie didn't do it first, you know.
Yeah.
Is it because of them sealing the healing thing that they all have the White Lantern symbol carved on their torches?
Who's got the torches?
In the two-page spread when you see all the mutant people or whatever from the extended cast of Thundercats is standing around looking awesome. And all of their torches have the White Lantern symbol on them.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I mean, they seem to be following him. They may have carved those symbols in there after they saw Hawkman explode with that light and symbol. Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah. I don't think it's. Wow, maybe that is the cast of Thundercats, isn't it?
I had to get that joke in there. Okay. I it's kind of sad because I really loved issue 7 of the of this series, and then they went back to doing all Hawkman and Hawkgirl and Martian Manhunter, and I suddenly don't care.
Martian Manhunter 1 has me kind of interested again now that he's figured it out, and I'm wondering if the forest we saw him burning down in the Vision last issue is the forest of Star City, or if it's supposed to be the forest he was trying to, you know, the vegetation he was trying to grow back on Mars.
I don't know. Yep, I don't know.
But there is nothing interesting to me about this Hawk story.
No, it's really... It's like it is supposed to be, but it's really not. I don't know.
And I have no idea what you guys are talking about. And yes, Brian is gone.
Where did Brian go? Did he just up and walk away?
There he is.
Probably had to drop a deuce or something.
No.
Speaking of Brightest Day-related things, by the way, I absolutely agree with what you were saying about Booster Gold last week.
Yeah, I'm so sad. I am such a bitch. I am still going to keep reading it.
What happened to Mr.
Hoping that it will get better.
He died?
It's funny how last time we talked about the book, we were both still pretty... We were okay with it, you know? I think this story that is currently running had only been a two-parter. Because for some reason, I just assumed when reading it, it was going to be a two-parter.
No, but the fact and now that it's like...
going on, and now it's like, yeah, there's a little blue guy, and he has the... magic book, but also there is space and who the hell are the? I mean, I was read the first bit of the issue and I was like, right, the Dark Stars. Don't know who they are. Reading an issue of the fucking Dark Stars here? Can
we
get a picture, please?
We need an issue of the Atari Force. I want to see the Atari Force show up. That would be awesome.
That was what?
The Atari Force.
Well, that would be awesome. But
I'm
very disappointed that they have not, now after 4 or 5 issues, found something else to do with the book other than, oh, what if it was back in the 80s, like when we wrote it? This is from a period of DC that I have no attachment to at all. You know, my DC is not the DC with the old round bullet. My DC is the DC with this little symbol in the corner. That's my DC. That's the only time I've only ever read DC since that symbol's been in the corner, and the old stuff holds very little allure to me, except maybe for Wolfman and Perez Titans.
I remember being freaked out by the new DC logo.
Oh, really?
Well, everybody's freaked out by change.
I'm like, this new logo is strange and frightening to me.
It looks universal.
Dreamwave-y at the time.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yep. Okay, so...
What else do I have? What is not bad? Avengers Academy is what's not bad.
Ooh.
This one were sold out on that when I tried. I was actually going to pick that up.
Oh, it went into second printing or third printing for number one or something?
They've at least got up to a second printing. They may be on their way to a third.
So it's selling pretty good?
It's certainly the weakest selling of all four books, but who's surprised by that? You know, I just want to see this thing succeed. I mean, the initiative consistently managed to succeed and was never in any danger, and I don't want to see that happen to the Academy either, because it's just so freaking good. This issue continues the thread of each of the opening issues being narrated by a different member of our cast, and this is her name Hazmat or Hazard? Hazmat, yes. This is Hazmat's issue. And I'm just really interested by the character. I mean, she's a pretty straightforward archetype. She is the person who's been cut off from the world by her powers and who's really bitter about it. But I think her powers are fascinating. She is poisonous. Her spit, her sweat, anything and everything that she secretes is poisonous and put her first boyfriend into a coma. It's a little roguey, but she is kind of like the opposite of rogue in that she's, you know, rather than be all, oh, woe is me, I can't kiss anybody, she's really twisted at the world.
Did she run away from home and give herself a superhero name like Rogue did in the X-Men movie?
No, she was taken from Osborn. Basically, the family barely wanted her anymore, and Norman Osborn came and took her and experimented on her, said he would give her control of her powers, but actually just made them worse. And now she has to live in a complete all-over suit, even, you know, beyond what Rogue wears. She has to wear a thing right down to a fishbowl on her head because even her breath is poisonous. It's a terribly interesting power set.
Wow.
And she narrates most of this issue as guest instructors come to the Infinite Avengers mansion, from Iron Fist teaching them about martial arts to Valkyrie teaching them about what is the precise name for this class? Superhuman gender roles, which Valkyrie interprets as feeding them mead and telling them about how they don't need men for anything.
Nice.
And they go on a field trip to the raft, where because this is part of a sort of but not quite crossover with Thunderbolts, in which, and by sort of but not quite, it's the same events from two different sides. They go on the story is called Scared Straight, because they're going on a field trip to meet the Thunderbolts. In the traditional school field trip, troubled youths sit down with criminals who tell them terrible stories type of thing. So they go to the raft where Luke Cage sets them up with the Thunderbolts. But during it, Hazmat uses her powers to generate an electromagnetic pulse, knocks out everything in a prison, so she can hunt down Norman Osborn and kill him. Because she's a little bit.
Don't blame her.
And there's some more interesting stuff with Speedball in here as well. But then I say there's interesting, because there's interesting stuff with really just about everybody who appears in this comic. It's, you know, I would have to say it's the best of the four Avengers titles, but I've probably said that before anyway. It's, and I know it'll always be the criminally overlooked fourth one, because it doesn't have fucking Iron Man in it or whatever. But it's just, you know, for my money, especially since this is one of the books that is remaining at $2.99 and not going up to $4 the way the Bendis and Brubaker titles are, it is the one that most deserves your support and your interest. You will be rewarded by checking this book out. I think so, anyway. And another book that you don't bloody deserve, because you killed it, you bastards, is Agents of Atlas. But there's not much I can really say about this that'll convince you to pick it up when it's ending next issue. It's the Atlas, the Agents' continuing fight against these mysterious other-dimensional triple aliens who are tied into Triathlon's powers. And a greater expansion slash retcon on what Busick was doing with Triathlon's origins and the greater meaning behind the crystal shards that gave Triathlon his powers. I still think of him as Triathlon, even though he's 3D man in this. And some things revealed about Bob, and just the continuous, consistent quality I expect from Atlas. Also continuously and consistently awesome is always Tiny Titans. This is the all super issue where everybody goes to the Fortress of Solitude for Match's birthday. That's Superboy's bizarro clone, if you don't know. But then the Legion of Brainiacs turn up to spoil it whenever they go on a field trip in the Arctic and get lost. And the last thing I read this week was Age of Heroes, which is kind of ending. This is the fourth and final issue of Age of Heroes, the new anthology series from Marvel, which kind of is a bum note to end on as far as reviews go, because the first story is just, it's a Black Panther story, and I couldn't give less than two halves of a shit about whatever it is they're doing with Black Panther.
What happened to Black Panther? I know everyone loved the Priest run, and then it was like everything was Panther after that.
Reginald Hudlin started writing it and basically reimagined Wakanda as some sort of scientific utopia where they split the atom 50 years before the white world. Because, you know, I guess they had that sort of technology in their frickin' mud huts they were living in, worshipping the rock that fell from space.
Yeah, it had John Romita Jr. doing the art. That's all I cared about.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry?
Yeah, John Romita Jr. doing the art, that's all I cared about.
I have never cared about the Black Panther at all, and now it's some chick is the Black Panther as well. She's that new Black Panther from when they relaunched it again, but...
It's not Storm.
No, it's not Storm, it wasn't Storm, it's some chick who I have no idea who she is, and nobody who reads Black Panther, anybody who doesn't read Black Panther won't know who this is and won't care. And in this, it's like, oh, you're a woman, and so one of the strong men who works for you is challenging your authority, and you kick his ass. End of story. Oh, and by the way, there's a new Black Panther miniseries starting in October. Yeah, that'll sell fantastic, I'm sure. You just keep riding that pony, Marvel. You don't let that go. Hate crime if it gets cancelled, I'm sure.
Oh.
Oh.
He says it like he thinks and like he means it.
More interestingly in this issue was a rather unusual, but I really quite enjoyed it. It was a Captain America story called Man of God. And I don't know if this, anything to do with this has ever been touched on before, but it's a story about the tribe of Eskimos who used to worship Captain America when he washed up in their lands frozen in ice.
I'm interested.
It is an interesting premise. I don't know if anyone's ever told a story about this before. Because it's just a weird thing that is in, what, Avengers number 4. We see them for all of, like, 3 panels. The Submariner pops up and throws Captain America into the water. And I honestly don't know if it ever came up again as a storytelling device. And this is, this is a pretty straightforward story. It's a story of an elderly man from the tribe and his son who is like, I don't believe in your ways anymore. He was just a frozen superhero. And it's a little flashback story as the grandfather tells the grandchild about how they found Captain America. And, you know, by coincidence or design, things just started going better for everybody. And so, he may well know now that Captain America is simply just a man, just a frozen superhero as it was, but he made me a better man, and that is all the God I need, as the character says. It's just a nice little concept for a story.
Is this some kind of, like, parody or reference to, like, the cargo tribes of the Pacific?
Huh.
I don't know what that is.
It's, go ahead.
There are tribes of people, you know, that lived in that had very simple lives that lived on, like, some of the Pacific. It was the Pacific, right? Some Pacific island.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, the U.S. troops, or I think even some of the Japanese troops, would come in and they would set up, you know, landing strips, and they would use them as supply docks during World War II. Well, the locals didn't know anything or know any better. All they knew was that when the planes came in, they would get stuff. You know, cargo would come in and they would get things. And so they actually developed entire religions based around, you know, and they call them like cargo tribes because they, like, even after all the planes and everything left, like, they would build like landing strips and fake planes and coconuts as radios and stuff, trying to lure the gods back in or lure the gods' favor in order to bring them, you know, stuff.
It doesn't seem like that kind of story because, I mean, this concept exists as far back as 64 or whenever it was that it happened. And it doesn't cast them as superstitious idiots or anything. It's actually a story about a man and the woman he loves and the rival he has for her love. And it's just the fact that the story happens to work itself out and the character credits the benevolent presence of Captain America as...
Is he frozen throughout the whole story, or does it have like an afterward after he?
The framing sequence of the story is set after he has come back from the dead, and it's them talking about it. And then most of the story is a sepia tone flashback to the events I've just been talking about. It's a solid little. It's a very straightforward sort of story, but I just love it conceptually because it plays with continuity in a way I don't think has ever really been played with before, so I'm all for that sort of thing. Then the issue is that there's a 2-page story with Zodiac. I don't know if anybody read the Dark Reign Zodiac miniseries. Yeah. I didn't, but I heard very good things about it. And it was by Joe Casey. Not Joe Kelly, Joe Casey, yeah. And this just sort of seems to be a strip to remind us that he exists. Every issue there does seem to be a strip in Age of Heroes just to remind us that the character exists, even though they don't have any direct plans for him. And then it ends with a lovely little one-pager by Dan Slott. Every issue is ended with a single page by Dan Slott. This is a Cloud Nine story, Cloud Nine from the Initiative, as Steve Rogers calls her in, now that he's in charge. And he just tells her that she has the highest mark, she had the highest marks from the Initiative, and was hoping she could come to join Avengers Academy. And she hasn't got the proper details of what's happened since the changeover. So she's like, well, that's not, you know, on the superhero license, that's not in the registration. And he says, you know, I revoked that shit. And she's all like, yes! And it's a brilliant happy ending for Cloud Nine. She weeks her uniform off and just takes to the sky on a cloud in the outfit she was wearing the first time she appeared in the first issue of the Initiative. And it's really great because she was the real innocent POV character of the Initiative when it started. And she got put through the ringer terribly. She has to see some pretty, nasty stuff, and she came out of it a soldier, which is never what the character wanted to be, but she got, it's not that she was an unwilling soldier, she just sort of got lost in the fog of it all, and I was always quite sorry for what happened to her. So this was just really great. It's like, yes, the character, she made it out okay. Yeah, and that was, so I really enjoyed that. And that's me for this week.
Nice. Okay, well, I only have one other thing that I read that hasn't been covered, which, of course, the only other thing I had read was Brightest Day. So, and it's not that exciting, sadly. So Green Lantern Corps is my other read. But hey, it says Brightest Day, so, you know, apparently I have to read it. even though it has very little to do. But anyway, as you may remember, Cyborg Superman is, for some reason, controlling the Alpha Lanterns. I guess because he can. He has.
No, why not? Robot,
you know,
robots.
He has, it's robots, and he can control them because that's what he does. But for some reason, he's trying to get Ganthet to. It's like I need to go back and read the last issue because I don't really understand. Because what he's trying to get Ganthet to do is to make them not Alpha Lanterns.
He wants him to cure the Alpha Lanterns because that mysterious cloaked Guardian person, if I'm understanding it correctly,
told him
that Ganthet can make them normal again, and he wants to be normal again. That's why he's making him do it.
Yeah, it's totally
makes
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
I know.
It still doesn't make any sense. And yeah. So, you know, anyway, Ganthet tries and kills a couple of Alpha Lanterns in the process, which is sort of whatever.
Oh, when did he shoot his head off? He tells him, he's like, hey.
Yeah, that was really excellent. As,
like brains all over the page.
Hank Henshaw told him to blow his head off. You know, told one of the Lanterns to prepare to blow his own head off, and basically giving Ganthet a countdown that if, you know, if it reaches one, then he'll kill himself. And Ganthet's like trying to explain to him. He's like, I wasn't even around for that. I don't know how it works. I was never a part of it. And you know, and like, Hank Henshaw is like really trying to shame him, just like, oh, you won't even try. Like, no, it's stupid. I don't know anything about it. So when he tells him he's going to kill the guy, he's like, all right, I'll do it. And then he has the guy blow his own head off anyway.
Yeah. And classic, like, diehard bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just like, well, I didn't want you to, you know, I wanted you to remember so that you didn't get the idea like you wouldn't try or
yeah.
Whatever. And then we learn that all of Stell's people are pussies. And
but they're robots. That makes no sense.
I know. That's yeah.
They
exactly.
Should be machines of death or something.
Well, yeah, because like they try to charge them all up. It's like, yeah, remember Stell? He's the amazing one among you. He's so brave. And be brave like him and fight Hank Henshaw. And they're all like, no. No. Nah. And then apparently they decide to call in who is this guy? Hennu? Apparently I'm not up on obscure Green Lanterns. He totally beats the shit out of one of the Alpha Lanterns. Like barehanded. And breaks her battery, which apparently breaks her connection to Hank Henshaw for some reason, because, I don't know, she suddenly became not cybernetic when the battery casing was broken. This all makes no sense, is what I'm trying to say. If it doesn't, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, this is a story that should have ended last issue. In fact, I thought this story ended last issue when I started reading it.
And the sad thing is, it has one more to go.
I know.
So, you still have one more to go.
I should be reading GL Core Y.
It's got Kyle Rayner in it.
I should have been reading it. You should have been reading it during Blackest Night. That's when it was interesting.
When
now,
the book started up, it was pretty good.
No, it wasn't.
I thought the extra characters were interesting. I thought that the a book with Kilowog.
It was
and,
Dave Gibbons writing it, wasn't it?
Guy, maybe. I can't.
I've never read anything that he's written that I particularly cared for. I can only think of a hand things I've ever read that he wrote. Anyway,
and this is just the only other interesting tie is apparently there's some yellow or white net, White Lantern net thing that shows up by some guy. I have no idea who he is on Quard, but he has like a White Lantern net thing. So
awesome! Can't wait.
Basically, don't worry about reading Green Lantern Corps. Just pick up Emerald Warriors, and everything will be fine.
That does seem to be where all the good has gone, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah, that I don't know, that's one of those that's like, it has all of the potential to be a good series. I'm just afraid it's not going to be. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to live up to the hype. Because they've been hyping it since Black Knight.
It's a third Green Lantern book.
Yeah.
That's a strike against it immediately, you know.
But Core is so bad right now that, you know, you could consider it the second and put Core at third and then call it good. Apparently Brian doesn't even like Green Lantern right now, so
it's okay.
Oh yeah, you didn't like the new issue of Green Lantern, did you?
It wasn't my favorite thing ever.
Dude, it was awesome. He's writing a list of Santa Claus and he's trying to
tell you.
I love that character. Why don't you like him?
He was okay.
Lars Lees is so amazing.
Yes.
And then Hector Hammond finally got to do something after 50 issues.
Yeah.
Well, and they've only been teasing him, yeah, like almost all the way from like Blackest Night. So, I don't know. Awesome. Well, that's it. There you go. That's,
yeah, there's nothing else going on this week.
Not really. We're back. We're in video. And Triplett for here.
Yeah.
You guys didn't see, but Triplett was here on camera for me while I slipped away. So we got to see Triplett's beautiful mug.
That's
if you're not listening to if you're not watching the video, you need to. Live every Sunday, sorta.
Sorta.
Yeah.
Sorta. Yeah.
We'll let you know.
We start this around
4:30 Eastern.
4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central.
Check it out, tfradio.net/live.
/live. And then if you also
/live,
and we're really trying to build up the listenership, because there's this the RFC as far as Transformers podcast, it still sort of bleeds into New Soundwave because those are crossing over because of video games, whatever. Those don't have to either, but we really want to build up the listenership for this, so please recommend this show to your friends, put up a sign or mention it at the shop when you're...
I'm close to canceling this show this much every week. Like, not long. I was like, well, do I want... I'm kidding. Sorry, I'll shut up. I'll walk away. I'm kidding.
That up. He is totally
I love this show. I love the show so much.
Maybe we should just talk about Transformers comics. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait.
No, I'll drive the ship away.
So, awesome. Well, gentlemen.
We have stuff I do, a retrospective.
Oh, my God. That's what we should do, retro comics.
Yeah, some kind of retro.
Oh, yes.
We ought to pick, like, one issue a week. And
well, one series. I just went through the audiobook version, the graphic audio version of Final Crisis on Infinite Earths.
You got me excited. I thought you were going to say Final Crisis.
No, that will have to come. But I really like Crisis on Infinite Earths. I loved I loved the changes that they made to the story. What?
Why did they change it? Do you know?
Well, I mean,
so it could all be told from Barry Allen's perspective.
Yeah,
so
Barry was the primary narrator of the book.
Everything that it looked like one character accomplished on the printed page of the Crisis comic was actually an invisible Barry Allen doing it from beyond time.
I like that.
Sweet.
No, it's not sweet.
They modernized. They made it fit in a little better with sort of kinda with DC continuity, kinda.
But then, like they do, they take whatever. 35%, no, about 80% of the book is like 7 issues of the comic, and then the rest of it is just squished down into the last 20% of the book.
It's based on Marv Wolfman's novelization, which came out late.
I know, I'm not really criticizing it's criticism is not directed at the graphic audio version. It's more
their stuff is awesome. Their stuff is great.
Really, really looking forward to a Final Crisis, if and when that's ever going to appear. I don't know if a novelization of that has even been done yet.
I don't know if there's, like, enough novelists on Earth to actually accomplish that.
Well, I believe Greg Cox, who did the 52 and Countdown Novelizations is doing this one as well.
Cool.
And as a man who was able to freely strip out 50% of the plots from 52 and condense parts of Countdown so that they actively made more sense and were better than the comic, I have a lot of faith that this version of Final Crisis might actually make sense. By its very nature as a prose novel, it will be required to have descriptive narrative text in there to actually explain what things are when they are occurring, which will immediately make it better than Final Crisis to come. So really looking forward to when Graphic Audio get their hooks in there.
Nice. But yeah, we may do that. We'll talk about, maybe we should start doing a retro review. That'd be interesting. Okay. Anyway, awesome.
Something. A graphic novel or something.
Yeah. Trade or something. Anyway, awesome. Okay. Awesome. Well, that's it. That's our show. Thanks everybody again for joining us. TFradio.net. That's the website. And, please tune in next week when it will be Fanboy versus
This has been Fanboy versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.